I'm Penny, and I am an alcoholic. Oh my gosh, all kinds of stories tonight. Talk about being grateful, not. A little bit about how I've been preparing for these talks is I open up a Word document, and I pretty much bang away, put 2 to 3 hours in every week to prepare my thoughts, because as I've said, I'm not very good at remembering. And so yesterday morning at 5:05 a.m., I hop on my computer, and I'm being prompted. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Microsoft Office, but the Word was asking me if I wanted to A, merge my document, B, save as, or C, overwrite it. So, you know, because I'm picking away at it all week, I just thought maybe I had a little period or something I added. So, yeah, overwrite it. I definitely want my latest version. And then I opened it, and it's a big white page. It was all gone. So I was by 5'10". You know, Eric is trying to give me my good morning kiss and how you doing, and I pretty much just said, I'm having a moment right now. I started thinking, okay, you're working step 10 here, you know, how can you make this work in this moment? And, you know, after about 15 minutes, you know, I'm just a person that really despises doing anything over again. I just hate that, even especially at work. And, you know, after about 15, what can I do, right? I had to start over. So this is not the talk I was going to give, but it is what I'm going to give, you know, in the end. So a little bit about step 10. I always like to start out in case we forget. By the way, welcome to our new people. Big jump coming to a step meeting early on in sobriety. Whoa, are you sure you got the right meeting? On page 84, it talks a paragraph about step 10. Which is continue to take a personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And the paragraph says, because last week I finished up, you know, at the end of, you know, if we were painstaking about this phase and the extravagant promises, the very next paragraph is, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. Amen. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed someone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. It's probably, step 10 is next to step 11 are my two favorite steps by far. And, you know, that one little paragraph, there was so many words in it that we should be familiar with by this point if we're at step 10, because we've worked steps 1 through 9. And I've always felt that working step 10 is nothing more than working steps 1 through 9. You know, for me, you know, it's that time of the year where we're getting ready. Well, some of us, I do anyways, spring cleaning, right? And I was thinking about, you know, steps 1 through 9 are like, you know, the deep clean that you do in the spring, or maybe buying a new house type of deep cleaning, you know. And step 10 is kind of like keeping everything in order after you invest all that effort into the deep clean. My thought life and my words today are what I need to manage. It's not about the drinking. It's about all the stuff that's going on up here. So when I see selfishness and dishonesty, resentment, or fear, I work the 10th step by working the previous steps. So step one might look like I determine how my life is unmanageable because of this issue. Step two, I trust that God can remove my thinking problem. Step three, I make a decision to turn the thought or behavior over to Him. Step four, if I can't isolate the motive behind my angst, I do a fourth step. I share my situation in step five with my sponsor or another AA. And by this point, I'm humble and see that my actions were harmful to someone else or me. And then step seven, if necessary, I make the amends. So it kind of reminds me of the instructions on the back of a bottle of shampoo. Wash, rinse, repeat. Wash, rinse, repeat. So that's kind of how I look at this process for me anyways. So even when I fail to keep my promises in my word, reconciliation with God and others is possible through admitting my shortcomings. Through this process, I get support and forgiveness from others. We learn to love ourselves as God does, and to love others as we want to be loved. We discover the bonding that takes place in sharing our wounds, experiences, losses, and struggles with others, and this in turn binds us with God and others. Dr. Bob said in 1948 that the only yardstick that AA had before there were the 12 steps were the four absolutes. He felt they helped him when he wanted to do the right thing and the answer wasn't obvious. There is much in the big book about honesty, unselfishness, and love. And if you know something about the big book, you know Bill was pretty involved in that. And it's interesting that the word purity, he doesn't stress a whole lot about purity, even though it's one of the four absolutes. So for whatever reason, Bill wasn't very comfortable. If you delve into the history of AA, you might be enlightened as to why that was. So I thought I'd kind of structure this because, again, 5 o'clock yesterday morning is like I need a new plan. I have no idea what I wrote down in the other one, really. So I thought I'm going to focus on the four absolutes and, you know, kind of share my experience with each of the components of it, if you will. I started getting a cold today. I've been sneezing and coughing. My mouth is really dry, so you're going to have to tolerate me drinking bubbles up here. So honesty, is it true or is it false? We all know right from wrong. I would not have chosen to lie or hide so much in my past if this was not the case. None of us are totally honest. That is why I need the power of God to assist me as I evolve into a new creature. And while the truth is painful to face, it is also liberating and teaches me not to trust in only myself. Relationships are built on truth and trust. If I'm not hiding, manipulating, or scheming in order to get my way, the other person becomes comfortable to lean in and begin to trust me, to confide in me, to be intimate. When I do slip into dishonest behavior, I need to quickly deal with it, turn from it, even if there is a cost to myself. If I withhold the truth of my actions out of fear of rejection, I'm more likely to continue to hide or distance myself. Lying and withholding the truth can indicate that I'm more committed to the thing I'm doing more than resolving the matter. That really hit me hard. I want to be a person known for integrity, for being ethical and having principle. I have a ways to go before I reach these lofty characteristics. Doing this self-examination day by day, week by week, year by year, gradually transforms me into the likeness of God mentally and morally. Morally, I believe we were created perfect, and this reflects God's holiness. And though we have strayed far from perfect holiness, whenever I recognize good and evil, I attribute that recognition to being created in the likeness of God. So I thought I would share a story that highlights one of my better moments, I guess. Because I could be here a long time about a whole bunch of other stories. But, you know, this honesty thing, you know, doing it even though it hurts. Doing it when I'm not going to benefit from it. And it was years ago, and we had a member of Alcoholics Anonymous was a friend of my husband's. And he was our investment wealth management person. That sounds so fancy, like I got something, some wealth here, but no, not a lot for sure. And there was a mistake made by the company, by the investment firm. And the money, I was transferring funds from a previous job, from that 401 into another retirement option, and they doubled the amount. It was significant. I would be who was I talking to? Oh, Eileen, talking about retiring. You know, it's like, no, I got another decade to go. If I would have left that ergo, I might be retiring here soon. But trying to convince, I mean, Eric and I both said that's not wrong, right? You know. It's kind of like when you go to the store and somebody gives you too much change back, you know. How honest, you know, do I want to be when, you know, that's a person that made a mistake and they're not making a ton of money and they're going to have to probably take it out of their pay at the end of the week, you know, because they overpaid. It was kind of that thinking that led us to go against our financial advisor, because it's like, they deal with millions of dollars. They're never even going to miss it, you know? And we said no. We said no, we can't let that go on. So that was instantly I knew what I had to do, but then listening to him, right? It's like, oh, they got millions. So, but that is so important to me today in my journey here with my higher power and with my fellow AA members, my sponsees, my husband, my family. It is just crucial to me that I be somebody that possesses those characteristics that I admire in other people. So one of the words that are part of the four absolutes is purity. And I think the way that I can isolate, like, what does that mean to me is, what is my motive? The definition of purity is not mixed or adulterated with any other substance or material, free of contamination. So when I hear that word, I think of innocent behavior or good morals. And although my life should reflect this, I know that I can display purity, but my heart is still corrupt with anger, envy, and selfishness. I heard this story a long time ago. I think it's a great word picture of what purity is like. So, you know, you're getting ready to make your favorite whatever desserts, let's say a batch of brownies or a cake, and you have all the ingredients and they look so good and you're mixing it up and, you know, you think it's just going to be awesome, and then you put a little poop in it, and I think, you know, it kind of grosses you out, right? A little contamination can just ruin the whole thing. And so that's how I feel in my heart, because I get really discouraged when I'm, going along in life and I just know that my heart's not in the right place, that I still have. And I'm not saying that I'm trying to be perfect or anything, but there's always room for me to work the 10th step and the 11th step. Always, always room for me to do that. Unselfishness. how will this reflect, how would this affect the other person? I think that's a great way for me to zero in, what does it mean to be unselfish? So unselfishness can be on a grand scale, like helping a friend, caring for the sick, donating time or money. And it can be on a lesser scale by pitching in at a meeting instead of talking with our friends, sending a card, praying for someone else's needs. But these actions can also be done with a heart that is motivated by guilt or ego. My goal is to have an unselfish heart, one that does not even have to decide to do an unselfish act, but just do it because of a desire to serve another. I think selflessness is difficult because it runs counter to human nature and always requires God's help to overcome. And the last absolute is love. And I have a lot about love here, which is probably because that's the thing I struggle with most. So to zero in, what is love? Well, for me, it's not an emotion. It is an action. I think the best definition of love is, and you might have heard this in your life, is love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no records of wrongs, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. So I thought I would spend the rest of my time breaking down each of those areas and what that means to me. So love is patient. So an example of me trying to be loving towards another person, what I do in my work is I work in information technology, and I do a lot of training. And I know how I am when I'm not getting something, and I know the person with me is like kind of intelligent, and they got their stuff together, and they know what they're talking about. And the more that I feel that I'm lacking or stupid or ignorant, you know, I start playing those tapes, the less I'm able to think. I just kind of shut down. And I've seen that and have had the opportunity to be aware of that when I'm working with somebody who's in that same situation. Once a week we do a training at work for new hires. A lot of it's on the computer, how to use our applications. And I've seen some really sad things. I've had people leave crying because they were, and their hands are shaking. And one fella, he obviously had no computer skills. I mean, he was trying to use the mouse; it was upside down. I've had people rotate their key. I mean, these people are without computer skills, and they're thrown into a situation which is way over their head, and they need training before that. And my heart goes out to them, you know, and I'm thankful for all those, for recognizing how I am and how, you know, I don't want somebody, even if they're not intending to be hurtful to me and make me feel like an idiot, that is an example of me being patient with somebody, might get them over the hump and allow them to, you know, not leave a room crying and quit the job that they just started three days ago. Another thing about being patient is not pointing out someone else's shortcomings. Boy, I'm really quick with that. You know, like, why do they have to do that? You know, well, why do I have to do what I'm doing, you know, half the time? But, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of just being a little patient. Who knows what is going on in their head? I had heard a story years ago. I was during a lead. This fellow was just a crazy person while he was driving, right? And what was going on is the person in front of them were driving, they were driving super, super slow, and he could not figure out why this person was driving so slow, and he was very impatient. And he found out when the person pulled into their driveway, and they had a fish tank in the back of the car. They were moving, and they didn't empty the fish tank. They left the water in it, so of course you're going to be driving extreme. I mean, you just don't know where people are at. I saw somebody this morning, two trucks, and they're flipping each other off and revving up their engines, honking the horn. It's like, oh my goodness. So anyways, patience. Love is kind. With so much anger in the world, kindness goes a long way. And so, seeing two people in their big trucks flipping each other off because I don't know what was going on there. The world just seems really noisy to me anymore. I don't know if that's the process of aging, but everybody is open to kindness. You know, we just... It feels like an angry world, so I think a little kindness can go a long way. Love does not envy. Caring more about someone else blesses somebody else's blessings instead of what I didn't get. Wow. I don't think I envy a lot, but sometimes it's like, you know, I have that thought, they don't deserve it. Not that I'm thinking I'm deserving it, but they don't deserve it either, right? See how I do that? I just play with words all the time. I'm hoping you're not like, where is she going with all of this? I mean, for me, this is my personal inventory. This is stuff I'm examining on a daily basis in the moment. So I'm hoping that I'm not too far out there. It's like, why is she talking about all this? Love does not boast. So that is an attempt to not one-up another person. I'm sure we've all been in social settings where, oh, I got a story better than that, you know. I think I'm pretty comfortable with saying I'm definitely, for the most part, not a person that engages in that type of activity. So look how loving I am, right? Love is not proud. Coming from a place of gratitude by remembering what I have is all because of what God has blessed me with. So that's easy. That wears a lot of masks for me. Pride does. Being proud of my daughter or proud of my house cleaning or, you know, proud of whatever, my achievements in the workplace or, you know, all of that, puts the focus back on look at what I did. You know, and it takes the gratitude away because look what I did. And for me, I need to be mindful that, yes, I have to do my part, but why is it? You know, I work at a place where everybody there has a disability. And when I come into work some days and I'm feeling not so great physically, you know, maybe I'm a little tired or whatever, rushed. And these clients that we have, I guess we're supposed to call them individuals. They're always changing the names to be politically correct, right? Now they're called individuals. But I think about what their life must have been like, how the harassment and the teasing and the troubles that they go through, and they're there with a smile on their face. This one guy today, he was cute as a bug's ear. I don't know how old he was, but you know, I had never seen him before, and he just wanted to know my name, and he would just point name. And you know, and then I saw him like 5 minutes later, and apparently he didn't remember who I was. He goes, name, you know. But you know, that brings joy to their life. And here I am trying to grasp joy out of anything, and a lot of it's not healthy, you know. So anyways, I have a lot of reasons to look at how God has blessed me. I don't need any more if I just focus on what I already have. So love does not dishonor others. And I thought about gossiping and making someone the brunt of my jokes. And I spent years doing that with my husband, unfortunately. I wasn't much into the gossiping, But I definitely would dishonor him. And, you know, even through my actions, I guess now that I'm thinking about it, you know, dishonored my parents by lying and carrying on and not being truthful with them. That was dishonoring the fact that they were my parents. Love is not self-seeking. Trusting God will take care of me, that yes, I have my part, but when I'm afraid I won't get my share, I'm exhibiting a lack of faith. So for me, whenever I find myself seeking, and not seeking God, but seeking to make sure I get my fair share in life, it just points back that you're not trusting in God. You're worried about the future and how things are going to pan out. And that was a big thing, you know, that lack of faith around my finances. I'm pretty much over that. And today I realize that I have nothing to worry about. All I have to worry about, if I want to worry, is today. I'm sure there's a lot of different areas of self-seeking. One that's coming to mind right now is, you know, making sure that you know what a great employee I am, right? And sometimes that can mean that I might dishonor another person, you know. And these are real, I guess, more like feelings, just an awareness, I guess, I have of, I don't trust myself. I know what my heart is like, and I just see that I have a long ways to go. Love is not easily angered. So not being so sensitive to what others are doing that doesn't align with what I think is right. So this is ridiculous. I think I mentioned here, I just get so irked about people that park in the visitor spots at work. Like, I don't know why that bugs me, but that's being easily angered. And it's being sensitive, it's petty, it's stupid, but it's like, that's not right, you know? So I have to watch for that, you know, that I like everybody to follow the rules. But, you know, how many times do I not follow the rules, right? Nobody's doing that to me back. If they are, they're not sharing it. So it's just crazy how I can twist things around. Love keeps no records of wrongs. Wow. That, to me, says resentments. And if the big book doesn't talk about something a lot, I mean, it's resentments. It's the number one enemy for AAs. If you want to know about not keeping wrongs, there's lots of references in the big book. Love does not delight in evil. Not taking delight in someone else's hardships. Watching for and secretly thinking they deserve it. I deserve a lot too, but God is graceful. And I can't say that I do a lot of that. I guess I'm more of, like, you know, the self-seeking, and that maybe they won't get recognized for something, you know, they're not following the rules, they deserve that type of thing. But to say I really delight in someone else's hardships, you know, thank goodness I'm not there, and I don't know if I ever was. I was never really a vindictive person. I would get a little moody around folks, like mini silent treatments maybe, or just kind of terse and short, that kind of stuff. So, love rejoices in the truth. There's nothing like sharing the truth and being set free, and in doing so, it encourages me to do likewise. So I guess what I'm saying there is, when you see somebody, especially during the fifth step, come with courage and humility and fear and all of the stuff that's wrapped up in sharing your life, And you finally get truthful with another person. You see that transformation. You see what God can do in someone's life. I mean, that just gets me jazzed up. I mean, you can see the walls come down. So, you know, I think that's loving, and that we should rejoice when somebody has that type of bravery to finally get honest. I had the opportunity last night to actually talk to a sponsee of my husband's. He's been struggling through something all of his life, and he's coming to terms with this. And he called me, and we discussed that, and I could just tell within 5 minutes, because I was relating with him, and I said, I understand what you're going through. And the fact that he was finally sharing the truth about this dark secret just lightened him so much. It freed him. Now, he's got a very, very long road to go, but that was the beginning. That is a really great thing to be involved in. Love protects. So we take care of the people and the things we love. In AA, we speak of the responsibility we have of being members of this fellowship. We protect the program by practicing the traditions. So I think the longer that we're around, if you've been around any time and been involved in any type of service work, you've probably been in a place where there's been some controversy. And we can get kind of passionate about a program. If you want to see all the things wrong with AA, you just Google AA. There's all kinds of stuff out there about why this program doesn't work. The latest reading, the latest thing I stumbled across a couple of days ago is that only 8% of people stay sober. You know, and I don't know if that's right or wrong, but the point is, this is a spiritual solution. So if only, you know, 8% of people want the spiritual solution, then only 8%, you know, hooray for the 8%, right? But yeah, I get kind of protective about the Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I share there might be other ways to stay sober, but I don't know what that is. This is what I have to offer you, and I believe in the traditions, and I believe in being a responsible member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's because I love this program. Love trust. Even after we get hurt, we have to put ourselves out there again in faith that no one is above hurting and no one is above hurting another. So that's hard, you know, especially for me. I came from a background where I was hurt a lot. I mean, I did a lot of hurting, but things were done against me too. And to trust another, to open your heart, to be willing to be hurt again, if you will. Sounds like a sappy Hallmark movie, but that's what it takes. You know, you just have to step out in faith and realize that people hurt each other, and you can't keep that, you can't allow that to keep you down. Love hopes, hope for the future and how we can be a part of God's plan. That's my hope. I'm hoping God can use me now, you know, and so that is what keeps me spurring along, like, how is God going to use me next year and 5 years from now and so on and so forth. Love perseveres. We get back up and try again. We attempt to not do this alone, but with God's help. We do not live in guilt and shame. We identify with who we are, not with who we used to be. Love does not fail. People fail, but love overlooks failure. So I'd like to end with from my other favorite book, and it goes, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect." So today I strive to live on a spiritual plane and to evaluate most everything against my belief, and in doing so find that the ways of this world are growing dim. More and more I find the world is too noisy, and I want to retreat into the quiet with God. The 12 steps are a part of this. They are a grid I lay on top of my problems, my hurts and struggles, to find a way out of my wrong thinking and wrong actions. This process renews my mind and soul. I see life as a test to show me how I'm doing in moving from a place of self to one of living in God's will. Thanks.
Hey, any questions and answer time? Anybody have any questions?
We can talk to her about the Washington.
What? Yeah, wash, rinse, and repeat. I was at work on a boat. No. Thank you, Penny. As you're going through and kind of assessing yourself, mm-hmm. whether you're using the four things you talked about, would you call it four?
Four absolutes.
The four absolutes. I know for myself, it's easy to go through those things and be hard on myself mm-hmm. and find the shortcomings, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I didn't do this. Do you find that it's important also to acknowledge the good that you've done? And how do you go about doing that?
It is very important. Do I do it? No. Of course not. And, you know, I had shared a few weeks ago when I was talking about the fifth step and working with others, you know, the fourth step talks about our deficits and our assets. And I kind of completely missed that because that's just the way I'm wired. So I guess more than anything I focus on how does God see me? And my higher power sees me as, you know, he can't see all that I see. He sees me as perfect. And so it has allowed me to get down off the cross, if you will, and stop trying to crucify myself. And it doesn't give me an excuse to stop persevering and moving towards those qualities I want to have part of my makeup. But I'm still not quite there with and I don't do my evaluation at the end of the day, you know. And I was glad when I read that paragraph in there about the 10th step quickly, I think it said immediately or quickly. I do it right when it happens. I don't wait. I mean, I think about my day at the end of the day, but as far as it, examining what it is that I might have, how I might have offended somebody, I do it immediately. I can't avoid it, right? I mean, it's there renting space in my head, and I can't move on from my day until I get it resolved in my heart. So I'm not good at looking at my good stuff. I'm just not.
Another completely covered all the top there.
You lose another week in a row.
Well, Bruce is done.
Almost.
Thanks, Benny. Mm-hmm. I enjoy listening to your monologue. I know there is, I just don't know it. And I was wondering if you do. What is the 10th step prayer?
I never memorized any of the prayers. Does it follow immediately after the it's on page 84, is the 10th step. Yeah, does anybody know the 10th step prayer? Brian? Go for it. Speak it aloud. That's it? Short and sweet. How can I best serve thee?
How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done.
The other question I was pondering asking was about, it says here that it requires admissions and corrections of errors now. Do you ever struggle with that and don't do it immediately when you know you'd...
Not a good move on my part. Yeah, because you know what happens is that if I delay, kind of it's not that bad next day, right? Yeah, she kind of deserved that, or it was, maybe I'm making too big of a thing out of it. Now, sometimes if it's something that I can't arrive to, you know, is there really something there, or am I just being dramatic? You know, am I being too hard on myself? You know, then I will wait, talk to the sponsor, talk to somebody, pray about it. There was an old timer, I don't know if how many of you folks knew Twiggy, he was from the county. Twiggy was probably about this tall. He probably was a little bit taller. But he worked, I think, construction. He was a, do you remember Twiggy? Yeah. So he would always say, sleep on it, kid. And so that's good sense, because sometimes, you know, I can jump into a situation and apologize for something I really don't need to apologize for, or I can make it more dramatic than I need to. But having the time to think and to lay these 12 steps on that grid on top of the issue and really examine it, make sure what is it that I'm trying to make an amends for. You know, if I don't even know why I'm saying I'm sorry, why say I'm sorry? So that's kind of my approach with that.
He dropped the mic. You want to read that prayer for everybody?
Oh, jeez. Okay. 10th step prayer. I pray I may continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness, to take daily spot check inventories of myself, to correct mistakes when I make them, to take responsibility for my actions, to be ever aware of my negative and self-defeating attitudes and behaviors, to keep my willfulness in check, to always remember I need your help, to keep love and tolerance of others as my code, and to continue in daily prayer how I can best serve you, my higher power. Cool. I think I have this book at home. Somebody gave it to me.
All right. That's mine.
It's Brian's. All right. It looks like I am dismissed.
I think we're done, huh? Any other questions?
All right.
Okay. Is there any announcement for membership?